In our text today in the gospel, Jesus is giving the disciples a sort of midterm exam. Yeah, I'm an educator, so I know a thing or two about exams. The purpose of an exam is to figure out what have they learned. Your disciples have been around Jesus for a couple years now. They've learned a lot. So have they figured it out? Have they been able to absorb all that Jesus has taught them? Have they been able to synthesize it and be able to put together in words who Jesus is? You see, Jesus has been kind of mysterious with the disciples to this point. He's been mysterious because he doesn't ever tell them straight out who he is. Which, I mean, imagine how this would go very badly. Oh, hi, I'm God, come follow me. You know, like, instead of telling them right out what the answer is, he's a good educator. He shows them. He demonstrates to them through his teaching that has great wisdom beyond any other man they've ever encountered, through his acts of healing, and through his miracles they can't even begin to explain. I mean, by this point, they've seen Jesus heal the sick, drive out demons, walk on water, calm a storm with a word. They've seen him feed 5,000. They've seen him raise the dead. At least a few of them have. At this point, they've seen Jesus do a lot. And so now is the midterm exam. Do the disciples have this figured out? Have they figured out who Jesus is? In fact, over and over again, Jesus has even stopped those who figured it out from saying it out loud. Like he tells like Jairus, for instance, hey, don't tell anyone what you just saw here. It's kind of like, you know, there's that one bright student who's figured it out, and like, no, I'm not calling on you. I want to see if the rest of you have figured it out. And so that's what's going on here. Jesus is going to see what they know. And so he says, who do people say the Son of Man is? You know, he starts out very impersonally. You know, what's the rumors you've heard? You know, you've been around other people who've seen some of the same evidence you've seen. What conclusions have they reached? And it says, well, some of them say you're John the Baptist. Okay? I mean, this is a somewhat reasonable assertion since Jesus and John the Baptist have pretty similar messages. Though, obviously, Jesus can't be John the Baptist because the two of them have been seen together many times before. But some wonder, is John risen from the dead and is continuing his ministry? Other people are saying, no, this is Elijah returned from heaven. Now, this is interesting because Elijah had a very big cliffhanger at the end of his story. Right, the stories of Elijah end with Elijah getting sucked up into heaven in a fiery whirlwind. And he didn't come back down again. And Elisha, his apprentice, realizes what this means. He realizes that he has been taken alive up to be with the Lord, which means the Lord must still have purposes for him. And so some have wondered, is this Elijah returned? Though if they had followed Jesus' teaching, they know it can't be because Jesus already said John the Baptist is the return of Elijah, in spirit, not in body. And so others have said, well, no, he's a prophet. And here they get pretty close to the truth, because Jesus is a prophet, in the sense that a prophet is someone who has received messages from God and conveys those messages to people. Right? Jesus is doing that. Though Jesus knows the mind of God in a way that no prophet ever knew before. In fact, if Jesus is a prophet, he's the prophet. The prophet is the one Moses talked about. I mean, Moses is a big deal, right? Moses is the greatest of the ancient prophets, the only prophet who could speak to God like a man speaks to his friend. Well, Jesus has that same sort of status, be able to speak to God as a man speaks to his friend, in fact, as a man speaks to his father. And so Moses said, if you ever see this guy, the prophet, the one like me, listen to him. Listen to him, follow him. And so the crowds have gotten some of the truth. They figure out some of who Jesus is, but there's another step they haven't yet taken. A huge step. Because to take that step would be to be changed forever. To take that step would be to admit things that shake the entire foundations of heaven and earth. Now Jesus brings this midterm exam to its point. He looks directly at his disciples and says, who do you say that I am? Who can do the kind of things that I do? Who would have the power I have? Who would teach the things I have taught you? Who am I? Well, here Peter steps forward. And Peter is usually kind of a knucklehead who speaks before he thinks. In this case, I think it's entirely to his advantage because he speaks before some part of him talks him out of it. He speaks the truth. He says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Right? this is the right answer. Jesus praises him, gives Peter an A. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah. Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you. Like, this is divine truth, Simon, that you've understood. And so let's unpack Peter's answer here. He says that you are the Christ and the Son of the living God. So Christ. So this is a Greek word, Christos, which translates a Hebrew word, Messiah or Mashiach. What does it mean to be a Christ or a Messiah? Well, it means that you've had the holy oil poured over your head. Literally, these words mean the oiled up one, which is a very strange title if you think about it, the oiled up one. But who gets oiled up in the Old Testament? Kings. Kings, right? This is what happens when you crown a king. There's a ceremony. Usually a prophet comes forward with a horn of holy oil, olive oil mixed with spices, and he pours that over the king's head to announce to everyone, this man is the one God has chosen to be his agent to bring his kingdom to earth. This is the man who will rule on God's behalf in order to bring justice and righteousness from God amongst you. And so this is a royal title, right? Peter calling Jesus Messiah, Christ, he's saying that he is the true king. Now, the kings of Judah and Israel ended a long time ago. By the time Jesus talks to his disciples, it's been roughly 600 years since there was a king of Israel or Judah on the throne. But the prophets proclaimed that there would be another king, and this king would actually accomplish what the other kings failed. Right? All the other kings, even the good ones like David, came up short. They were sinful human beings who could not perfectly bring God's kingdom among us. But the prophet said that when the king returns, he will be the one who brings God's justice. He will bring God's righteousness to earth. And so that's what Peter's proclaiming. You match all the signs the prophets attach to this. The prophets say that the blind would see, the lame would walk, the mute would speak, the deaf would hear. You're doing the Messiah stuff, Peter says. It's you, isn't it? And then he adds the title, Son of the Living God. And here I think Peter doesn't maybe even fully understand the weight of those words. Here, the living God, to distinguish him from the dead gods, the gods of the pagans, who are no gods at all. You are the Son of the Living God. And here, by saying this, he is saying that what you're doing is what only God can do. Who can turn water into wine? Here he's manipulating matter at the subatomic level, it seems. Only God can do that. Who can control the weather and make the winds and the waves do what he says? Only God can do that. Who can provide food out of nothing? Only God can do that. And who can raise the dead? Only God can do that. That in every step, Jesus keeps doing things that a human being could not do. Could not do unless God were with him, unless he were God. And so Peter takes that logical step that the other disciples are too timid to take. This is God in the flesh standing before him. Peter has passed the test. But that's just the midterm. There's more to come. And actually, almost immediately, Peter gets another quiz. Because Jesus says, and the Son of Man is going to be handed over to sinful men. He's going to be crucified and on the third day rise again. How can this be reconciled? How can the victorious king suffer and die? How can God himself suffer and die? Like, Peter doesn't have any way of integrating this new information into his model. He doesn't know what to do with this. And so Peter tries to talk Jesus out of it. And Jesus says, no, get behind me, Satan. This is not the way. The test will become even harder when it actually happens. When Jesus actually is arrested. When he actually is convicted in front of a kangaroo court. When he is mocked and beaten and tortured and nailed to a tree. When he slowly dies, and they pierce his heart and put him in a tomb and roll a stone in front of it. How can that happen? How can God's Messiah lose? How can God himself receive such shame? This shakes all the disciples' faith to their very core. Then he gives them one more piece of information that's even harder to reconcile. On the third day, the tomb is empty. There's no body in the tomb. Angels tell him what happens. Women talk about what happened. And finally, there's evidence that none of the disciples can deny. Right in front of them stands the risen Christ. They see the wounds in his hands. They touch him. They eat with him. They converse with him. This is the real thing. And so now they, how can they put this all together? That he is the Christ and the Son of God. He died, and now he lives. Well, another often maligned disciple finally puts it all together. Thomas says, "My Lord and my God." That this is the answer to the exam. Christ is Lord of life. He is God exalted over all, but God in flesh, the crucified and risen one, that is who he is. And this changes everything. The disciples' entire lives are rearranged around this new truth. That they can't go back to their old ways. That life has now started anew. They're now members of the resurrection life. Who do you say that I am? This is not just a historical question. This is not just a question that long ago Jesus asked and now we know the answer and it's easy. This is a question that all of us must confront. Who is Jesus of Nazareth? We could go ask our culture and ask people out there, hey, who do you think Jesus is? We'll get lots of different answers, a lot of bad ones. We'll, you know, hear that Jesus was a really wise man, like a Confucius or a Gandhi or something, which it's true he's wise. That's far short of the full truth. People might say that Jesus was a revolutionary. He tried to take down the system, but the system bit back and killed him. True, but not the full truth. You hear people say Jesus was a communist or a capitalist, a libertarian, an anarchist, any number of things. Everyone has to confront the fact, who was this man, Jesus of Nazareth? But who do you say that he is? Who do you say? This is the question that will define your entire life. Who was this man? Well, we have evidence. Now, it's different than the evidence that Peter and Thomas and the disciples had. We have not seen the miracles with our own eyes. We have not touched the risen Christ with our own hands. But we have evidence. And the evidence here is the evidence of history. And I'll say three historical facts I feel are so completely beyond question that even a well-meaning atheist would have to agree to them. Those three historical facts are Jesus of Nazareth, the first century rabbi, was crucified by the Romans and died. Right, that is just hard historical fact. I'm more sure of that than I am that Julius Caesar existed. Right? Because all the evidence of all history says that happened. I never saw Julius Caesar, I never saw Jesus, but in both cases, the evidence of history points clearly, he died. And no one really contests that, to be honest. There's a couple people with their wackadoodles. Right. Second hard historical fact, on the third day, the tomb was empty. Now, here I'm not even explaining why the tomb was empty. Just simply, this is a fact, the tomb was empty. All the ancient witnesses agree the tomb was empty. Even the enemies, even disinterested third parties agree the tomb was empty. And it's very simple, because if the tomb wasn't empty, well, it's very easy to discredit Christianity, just open the tomb and drag out the body. The fact that no one ever tried to do that was because everyone knew the tomb was empty. Hard historical fact. The third hard historical fact is that the disciples rearranged their whole life around this resurrection experience. That their entire lives changed. They went from timid little fishermen to bold proclaimers of the gospel. They changed which day of the week they worshiped on. And the biggest thing, to a man, all of the disciples were willing to suffer exile or death rather than give up this truth. I mean, why would people give up their lives for a lie? The disciples had nothing to gain and everything to lose, and yet they held fast, even under torture. And I know a thing or two, under torture, human beings are known to say anything. Under torture, human beings will say things they don't believe just to get the torture to end. Yet none of them ever backed down from the story. And so these are the facts of history. These are the facts that confront us and everyone else. We cannot just wipe this under the table. This is truth. The tomb was empty. And I think the only reasonable explanation for why the tomb was empty is that Jesus called his own shot. He said he was going to die, he said he was going to rise, and then it happened exactly the way it did. And so if this is the case, who do you say that he is? Who could do such a thing? Who could do this? And only God in the flesh, the Lord of life, could die and rise again. And one more step that I think is very important. He did all these things for you. It's not just that he did them like to glorify himself, to show off, call a shot. He did them for you. He suffered for you. He died for you. He rose for you. He left behind the evidence for you because he wants you for his own. He wants you to be his own people who will share in his resurrection life, who will be part of his kingdom forever. Who do you say that Jesus of Nazareth is? Peter got the answer right. Thomas got it right. And I encourage you to confront this question, answer it, and confront everyone around you with this and answer it. This is the question. Who do you say Jesus of Nazareth is? Amen.